Hey everybody, it's Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and welcome to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience Podcast here on chicagojazz.com. I am very excited, man. There's a very interesting group coming into the Jazz Showcase July 25th through the 28th. Pat Bianchi, the great organist, is coming in with his own group this time. He is going to be at the Jazz Showcase with Joe Locke on vibes, Paul Bollenbach on guitar, and Byron Landon on the drums. And I've got Pat on the phone. We're going to talk a little bit about the Showcase gig on July 25th through the 28th, and probably a lot, some of his background and everything else. So, Pat, thanks for jumping on today.
Thanks, Mike, so much for having me. It's great to talk to you.
Definitely. So let's talk, before we talk about some of your background, and I mean, you've played with everybody and you've toured all over the world, but let's talk about specifically the Chicago Jazz Showcase gig that you've got coming up July 25th through the 28th. Now, you mentioned in an email when we were going back and forth that this is the first time you're actually leading your own group at the Jazz Showcase. Is that right?
Yeah. I've been very fortunate in years past, working with the great legendary guitarist Pat Martino. We had come to the Showcase once a year, and I had been with Pat, four or five years in a row. And then actually my very first time I performed at the Jazz Showcase was back in 2008. I was playing both Rhodes, Fender Rhodes, and also organ with the great Joey DeFrancesco. So we had done a week at the Showcase back in 2008. So
it was like
this
dueling,
is a big step for me.
It was like dueling organs there for that weekend?
Well, I wouldn't say dueling organs. You know, I play a lot of Rhodes and certain times sort of take over what the guitar player might do. It's kind of a different sound. Sometimes we'd have, I'd have an organ as well, and we kind of go back and forth trading, fours with the drums or things like that. Or sometimes he would sing, play trumpet, and I would play behind him. So it's just a different kind of configuration.
Oh, that's cool. That's wild. But yeah. I know I've caught you at the Showcase with Pat Martino the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And now you're coming in. We actually had Joe Locke on the show about 2 months ago, because he was coming in to do a special performance, a tribute to Lionel Hampton with one of the organizations in town. And he mentioned he was coming back with you in July. So, I mean, Joe is obviously a world-renowned vibraphonist, and that's got to be an interesting sound. You've also got Byron Landon and Paul Bollenbach, so you've got guitar, drums, but vibes with an organ, with B3 organ or Rhodes, or I'm assuming you're probably going to play B3 organ on this whole thing. How did that configuration come about? Have you played with Joe before, and it's got to be a unique sound?
Joe and I I have a long history with a lot of those guys. Actually, Joe and I are both from Rochester, New York. So I had first seen Joe playing. He came into town in Rochester, and I was a teenager, maybe 16, 17, 18 years old. So I knew about him back then. And, it was like it had been always somebody I'd wanted to play with for a long time. And we had met, along the way on a couple of different occasions. And the opportunity never really presented itself until this record, actually, where I just ended up calling him, because on my record, in the moment, I have a number of different special guests, and I thought it would be a perfect opportunity to bring Joe aboard and, do the vibes, but it was in a trio format on the record, just vibe, organ, and drums.
Mm-hmm.
So, with adding the guitar, it adds a whole other layered element as well, but it's a really unique sound. I mean, there were some recordings, with Larry Young and Bobby Hutcherson that had happened back in the 60s. With his vibes and organ, and it works really well together. The sonic thing. So we're just kind of building off of certain elements of that, a lot of arrangements, things that are voiced out, so to speak, between the vibes and the organ. Those end up being really a creative side of the arranging technique. But Joe and I actually then had done a lot of playing. I was a member of his trio, so play with him occasionally in that trio, which myself, him, and great drummer Marvin Smitty Smith.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole thing is kind of like grown, into all different, him doing a trio thing, then him coming out with me and doing a quartet thing. And so it's just taken on different forms, so it's really great to have him aboard because of his creativity. I mean, the mastery of this instrument, of course, it's inspiring.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And I should have mentioned, of course, your new recording In the Moment that's got Paul Bollenbach and Byron Landon, but then you also have like Peter Bernstein on there, Kevin Mahogany, mm-hmm. Pat Martino, Joe Locke, Carmen Antorio. I always screw up his last name. Carmen And Torrey Jr. Yep. The killing drum. He plays with you with Pat, doesn't he?
Correct. Yeah, and we've known each other since we were teenagers as well, because he's from Buffalo. Again, I'm from Rochester, so it's another long connection right there, too. So
let's talk a little bit about the recording, too, because, I mean, you have special guests. So what can people expect to hear? Of course, it's available at patbianchi.com, and we'll link everything up. So why don't we talk a little bit about the recording as well? I mean, you've got the core rhythm section, yourself, Paul, and Byron, but then you have special guests. I mean, are there original tunes on here, a lot of standards? What can people expect to hear on this?
It's kind of a mix. I have... if I remember correctly, one or two original tunes that I had recorded, but some of them are standards. Some of them are not really standards in the sense where I did a version of Stevie Wonder's Don't You Worry About a Thing, as well as a rather ambitious arrangement of Willie Nelson's Crazy. So, I mean, it's kind of a mix in a lot of those ways. I mean, I cover everything from Chick Corea to, you know, Billy Eckstein with, you know, featuring, I think it was one of Kevin Mahogany's, actually his last recorded performances when he sings I Want to Talk About You on the record.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's something too. I mean, you know, when you are playing and you're backing up Pat Martino, you're backing up all these different people, you're playing in different groups, but you're playing organ. How does your organ playing change depending on who you're backing up, or like, you know, if you're playing with Joe Locke, if you're playing with Pat, if you're playing with Kevin Mahogany, if you're playing with different artists, do you have to adjust the way you're playing organ? Because, I mean, the organ is kind of like a train coming down the track sometimes. So I would imagine if you're with a singer, you're probably accompanying a little bit differently than if you're playing with a guitar player.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, with the music scene and the state of the education changing overall, I was very fortunate to catch the very, very tail end of being a sideman for a lot of much older and much very established musicians. I mean, when I was 21, 22, I was playing behind, as a pianist, mind you, Dakota State and Red Holloway, all these different people.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And I learned, it's like, first of all, as, you know, sideman, you know, to use the term in a broad sense, you're there to support and back up to play with, or who hire you to play with them. They love what you do, but they also want certain things. So I really have worked hard to be able to adjust elements of my playing on the fly, or with, to, you know, not only allow myself to speak my voice when I'm playing, but to also accompany them and make them, you know, sound great. You know, as you mentioned with Kevin Mahogany, you know, I don't go down there like a freight train.
Right.
You know, you can't. You know, you can't. It's just, it wouldn't work. But then also, I play with Pat Martino. He has a very specific rhythmic and harmonic type approach that he likes and that he draws from when he plays. So I'll shift and play more out of that way. You know, or if I'm playing, when I played with Lou Donaldson, you know, more out of the traditional, you know, gut bucket blues organ. And, you know, I'll shift that way. If I was playing with more freedom, you know, so I try to do that because in the end it's for the sake of the music, you know, and it ends up sounding more cohesive. And I really actually enjoyed the challenge because playing with Peter Bernstein is a different approach for me than playing with Paul Ballenbeck. And both of them are master musicians, but both have different approaches. So I wanted to make sure that everything that was happening from my end was cohesive and made sense within the music. So yeah, I mean, the long story short is, yeah, a lot changes depending on who I play with.
You know, I'm always curious because, you know, you brought up all these different players, and especially the older guys. I mean, Red Holloway or even Pat Martino, who you're still with and all that. Do they tell you what they're, you know, like when you first start playing with them, you say, you know, that was good, but don't do that because I don't like the way that's jiving with the way I'm thinking. I mean, do they actually give you feedback on that? Because some guys won't, right? Some guys will just be like, they expect you to know and they'll play a certain way and they hope you catch on. But then some of them might just say, hey, you know, let's just make sure we're going to go this direction. This is kind of what I want to hear. I mean, did you learn stuff from those guys did they give you feedback like that? I'm always curious about that.
Some of them, yes. I think the thing you have to learn how to do is with those, sometimes within the notion of musicians, at least I feel like, is you have to be all eyes, all ears, because they won't always say something, but there will be, you know, an indication. I mean, it can be very subtle. it could be a lot more blatant. There's, I mean, I could, to answer certain a question one way, yeah, Pat has said specifically, I'm looking for this or I would like this. And at times you can just sort of also assume that that's what he wants by the direction he's going in his plan. Gives you a quick look. You know, I've had, when I was really young, some of the older cats, you know, they'll just, you literally yelled at me and say, just lay out, don't play. You know? And, you know, so that happens. And then there's like the subtle, not so subtle things. Like, you know, my, one of my favorite stories is I was playing with Lou Donaldson at the Vanguard. We're doing a week at the Vanguard. And, you know, it was, you know, I was, we're playing, you know, Rhythm Changes tune. And, you know, he very wants a very specific thing. And so I decided, you know, okay, everything's going really well. I'm going to sneak some other stuff in there. And I, you know, I tried to sneak this other harmonic stuff in there that, you know, looking back, it really didn't fit what was going on. And as I was playing it and I finished playing it, and I was all proud of myself that I had pulled it off. He just was standing next to me and he just slowly turns his head over and looks at me and gives me the dirtiest look. And that right there, I mean, that's there's a lesson right there, you know.
But you know what? I think that's I think that's important. I mean, I know that you're still teaching too. I think, right? You're on faculty at Temple University. I'm looking at through your bio, and also Queens College. So, I mean, you know, when you have kids and you're playing, I mean, to me, I think it's always easier, especially myself as a drummer. I'd rather not be guessing. You know, if you don't like what I'm doing, could you just tell me what you don't like? I'll just not do that anymore. It's not like, you know, this guessing game that we have to play here. And do you kind of relay that to your students too, that you have, and just say, hey man, you know, if you're with a bass player, you're with a drummer, you're tell them what you're looking for. Don't play the guessing game. And then if they can't give it to you, then, you know, obviously you can move on. But I mean, I think that's the best direct area, right?
Yeah. I mean, always, I mean, you know, constructive conversation about that thing is always best. You know, to me, I mean, it can't hurt to say, I mean, cause there's always the element of, you know, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. You know, so can't hurt having those kind of conversations. But, you know, there are musicians out there who don't take that very well, even if it's said in a very good way.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of a catch 22. But then there's also a thing of some of the older school musicians. It's like, you made it this far to this gig. Why should I have to tell you what to do? You should know what to do.
Yeah.
A lot of different ways of looking at it. You know, so, I mean, it's, to me, it's almost a case per case basis. Speaking for every situation, is sometimes, you know, you don't have to say anything, you know, and it just sort of works itself out. Other times you kind of have to nudge it along a little bit. You know, obviously for me playing with Byron, Mark, you know, excuse me, Byron, Paul Baumbeck, you know, Joe, any of those people, you know, I don't have to say a word. And usually what they end up coming up with, you know, is better than what I could have imagined in a lot of ways too.
Oh, yeah, 100%, you know, and we should mention, of course, people are listening to this podcast, and they can see you live and in person July 25th through the 28th at the Jazz Showcase here in Chicago with that same group that you just mentioned. Are you on tour for the new album? Is that, are you kind of hitting a bunch of spots right now coming through the country? Is that how you're ending up at the Jazz Showcase, or is this a one-off coming into Chicago to kind of get the ball rolling?
Yeah, it's kind of a one-off, you know, coming into Chicago to do this. Wednesday was kind enough to give me this opportunity. And, you know, especially with the guys in the band being so busy doing their own things, you know, and other projects, it was like it all came together, you know, it's like that. So I just decided, you know, everybody's free. Wayne is giving me this opportunity. You know, we're just going to make this happen, you know, and, you know, we have other dates scattered in different places, you know, throughout the rest of 2019 and looking at 2020. But, you know, it's just with less and less really great jazz clubs, you know, around the country, the whole factor of routing to be able to go from one city to another and play and, you know, finance a tour is becoming more difficult. So you have to kind of pick and choose what you do.
Well, and you're right. I mean, it's got to be one of those deals because, I mean, when you were touring with, like, Lou Donaldson, right? I'm sure there was a routing system still back then where you could play Chicago and then go to Milwaukee and then go to Minnesota and then come down and go around and things like that. And there's still some of those clubs, but, I mean, to do more than – I mean, the showcase is kind of unique because you're in there for 4 days, two shows, and then you have a matinee on a Sunday. And, you know, there's not a lot of those clubs left, I suppose, throughout the country.
No, I mean, there's a handful of clubs that do 5 days or 4 days. I mean, even New York, I mean, you don't even see that very often. Maybe the Vanguard, you know, the Standard. Blue Note doesn't even do that 5 days, 4 days anymore. Either does Disney's Club Coca-Cola. So Birdland sometimes too. But I mean, outside of those kind of places, yeah, it's becoming farther and fewer between. And then, you know, just the cost of traveling. I mean, airfares ain't getting any cheaper, you know, all hotels. So you have to plan carefully, you know, when you do these kind of things, and you know, you build your circuit. So, but like I said, this opportunity came along, and you know, I know it's going to be, you know, burning all 4 nights.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's like, you know, get the band out there and, you know, just light the place up and, you know, hopefully fill the room.
So let's talk a little bit about what people can expect to hear. So you've got the new recording, but I mean, obviously you're doing two sets a night, 8 and 10, and that's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then the Sunday matinee at 4 o'clock still happening as well. And kids 12 and under get in for free there at the Jazz Showcase, which is, of course, at 806 South Plymouth Court in Chicago. Of course, everybody knows that. JazzShowcase.com. You guys can buy advance tickets there. But what can people expect to hear? Is it just going to be like you guys are just are playing tunes and throwing down and having a good time? Or is there some special original things happening? Or what do you have on tap?
Well, you know, I kind of have a mix in the sense that I have some, not all of, but you know, I'm going to play a handful of tunes from the record. You know, and then also I have some new things I've been working on that either for future recordings or whatnot, arrangements, whatnot. And, you know, some, you know, jazz, I guess they jazz tunes that are not necessarily standards, but it's going to be, you know, a pretty high energy, you know, hitting pretty hard for sure, but it's not going to be out in left field by any degree at the same time. So, I mean, just come in expecting four musicians hitting hard. And, you know, the thing about this band, too, we're always having fun, laughing on stage, you know, kind of try to, you know, screw each other up, you know, joking. You know, trying to keep that element that's so important that's kind of dying, too, and it's just the joy within the playing and the performance itself.
That's one of those things, you know? Right? I mean, because you've played with a lot of guys, and, I mean, you brought up Red Holloway, and I can remember seeing Red Holloway, and, I mean, that guy would smile ear to ear the entire time he was playing, basically. He was having the greatest time in the world, every single tune he was playing, it seemed, you know, and it radiated into the audience, and sometimes it gets a little serious when you see some other cats playing and things like that, but I just think that that's one of those things, especially with the jazz, the way the jazz scene is now, the way the music scene is now, I mean, you have to engage with the audience and have a good time, and the audience has a good time. I mean, it seems pretty simple, but sometimes it's pretty difficult to do. But it sounds like that's the track you're kind of planning on for this weekend, that you guys are going to have a good time and play at a real high level.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, if you can't be having fun, I mean, if anything, you start looking like you're just taking yourself seriously. And what's the fun in seeing that? You know, and then more uptight. Everybody's very, you know, very, very conservative, if you will, on the stage. And it's like, if everybody's smart and having a good time, and as you mentioned, you know, it kind of becomes infectious. Number one, the audience gets pulled in more, and they can appreciate that, and they can relate on another level. But number two, that comes through in the music, mm-hmm. you know, in an even stronger way, you know, bringing that, I mean, we're, you know, that whole thing of almost like, you know, okay, we're having fun, we're family up here, we're having a good time, you know, can be a part of that aspect too. So
yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk a little organ stuff here. Who, like, when you were coming up and you were playing, did you start out on piano, I would imagine, and then move on to organ? Is that something that just drew you to organ, or you're playing piano?
No, I started on organ.
Oh, you did? Oh,
no,
okay.
Organ, actually. I'm one of those rare that you know, played bass lines with my left hand before I had played chords with my left hand. And the way that kind of came about is I come from a family of musicians in Rochester, New York, back, you know, when I was, there was a strong dance band circuit, I guess you could say, which is Moose Clubs, Elks Clubs, the big band music in smaller group formats. And my father was a drummer. One grandfather had played trumpet and led his own band. My other grandfather had played saxophones and keyboards, led his own band. So I was always surrounded with music in that way. And growing up, my father would record his band that he would play with, because he was also into reel-to-reel big tape recorders and recording and the whole thing. So he'd bring home these recordings, and I heard what sounded like an organ to me. I mean, I didn't know what an organ was. I didn't know anything, but I was just kind of fascinated by that keyboard sound. Mm-hmm. And, so I had like a toy keyboard. I kind of tried to emulate and figure some of that stuff out, and they saw I got more interested, you know. And what I didn't realize is what I was actually hearing on the recordings was called a quarter box, which is basically an accordion with organ electronics built in. So it wasn't actually a Hammond B3 or anything like that, but it was a similar sound. And, you know, so as I was, I turned seven, I think, seven or eight, and obviously I was very interested in music, and I was looked like I was taking it very seriously. So as a Christmas present, one grandfather had given me a Farfisa Compact Dual, I believe it was, organ. It's basically like an electronic organ of the 60s, one single keyboard with bass lines, or like a keyboard part where you can play bass. And my other grandfather had given me an amplifier to play it, sort of like a family present. So I just, once I got that, that was it. I was in the basement all the time learning, you know, these tunes I heard on these recordings. There would be family jam sessions, I guess you could say. My father played drums, I play this organ. The other grandfathers would join, you know, one played sax, one played trumpet, and, you know, playing all, they would be in certain ways considered standards of the big band era, you know, and learning all those tunes. And by the time I was 13, I was actually going out and gigging, doing this, you know, playing out clubs, blues clubs and all that. And then when I got into high school, my high school band director was a jazz piano player. And that's what kind of got me into jazz, playing jazz piano and getting those things together. But then 16, 17 years old, I heard Joey DeFrancesco's Live at the Five Spot. And that just kind of became, was like, okay, this is what I want to do. And in time, eventually switching back to organ full time.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's really unusual, right? I mean, usually it's the opposite way around. But, you know, I've always thought, too, I mean, you know, if you play organ and you kick left-handed bass, it's like all you need now is a drummer. That's it. You don't have to worry about anybody else. You can go get gigs right away.
Pretty much.
You know.
Pretty much.
That's one of those things. So, I mean, that's pretty interesting. So you got your piano chops together after really the organ thing. So how difficult was that? Because, I mean, you're used to playing left-handed bass probably, and then all of a sudden now you're thinking a little bit differently on piano then.
I didn't think about the difficulty. I mean, it was just something I kind of had to learn and had to deal with. And for a while, the whole left-hand bass thing just sort of went on the back burner. So I ended up doing my undergrad at Berklee College of Music for jazz piano.
Oh,
and
okay.
I think around after I had graduated and, you know, moved to Colorado for a little bit and was playing out there and got back into the organ full time, because the kind of organ B or jazz organ major at any school or whatever, self-taught. And, you know, it was just, there's a lot of challenges in playing left-hand bass. You work on even harder than the piano, because if you're playing a really up-tempo tunes and not let the time slide, you know, playing more complex tunes, you know, and then seeing Joey DeFrancesco live and the things he could do, I mean, it was just like, okay, I see that I got a lot of work to do. So it was basically, the harder thing was basically taking the left-hand bass of the organ for myself to a whole other level where I could, you know, execute, you know, jazz repertoire, original people's original music, playing odd time signatures, and go beyond, you know, the traditional, you know, floor to the floor, you know, shuffles and blues and boogaloo, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so that's where the challenge laid for me.
Well, that's, and I mean, that's one of those things. I mean, when I'll see, you know, you're playing with Pat, and it seems like every tune that he plays, when he gets into a groove, each tune is getting faster. So, you know, and it's grooving harder.
Yeah.
Which is awesome, you know, but I mean, as an organ player, and he's soloing, you're soloing, drums are soloing, going back and forth. I mean, that's just like, you probably, I mean, you can't even think about it at that point, but I mean, the amount of woodshedding you had to do to get to that point has to be incredible. I mean, what do you tell your students? Like, what, when you have your students and they want to learn how to play B3 organ and you're teaching them all that stuff, I mean, is there a certain method to kind of getting tunes together in that way so that they're not overwhelmed by all the stuff they have to do? I'm always curious because I know there's a lot of students that listen to this.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that I approach it. I mean, first and foremost, it's always dependent on the students, where they happen to be at the moment in terms of their playing. You know, because every student has different things that need to be addressed. But I think when I'm starting with somebody who's a pianist, good pianist, and building up from the bottom, you know, with playing organ, in terms of getting bass lines, the biggest thing that I make them shed is playing, say, take a blues and F, playing a solid bass line first, you know, with either a metronome on 2 and 4 or a play along drum track, and making sure to listen that the quarter notes in their bass line are consistent. You know, certain beats aren't too short, or because of the physical thing where you have to jump your hand position, it doesn't cut a note off. You know, so keeping those consistencies in the left hand and learning that way, and then to solo, forcing them to do nothing but solo with quarter notes, and, you know, put rests in there. But this way they're building up independence at a very, very basic level. It's not trying to execute a bunch of eighth note lines or anything, you know, complex or too hip. You're just getting the fundamentals rock solid first, and then once they can play, you know, broken quarter note solos, then start making more complicated, shorter eighth note phrases, you know, and then the length of the eighth note phrases, triplets, sixteenths, you know, and just keep building it piece by piece. Because if you have a weak link, which I did when I was, you know, really getting back into the B3, certain things I didn't know to address or didn't address, you have that weak link down there. It's like playing in Jenga, you know, it'll cause everything to fall apart if you're not careful.
No, that's
so it's dealing with the fundamentals.
That's the key, right? Dealing with the fundamental. And the way you just described that makes perfect sense. I mean, you know, it's easier to talk about it than actually do it. But, I mean, it makes perfect sense that you got to break it down to that nth degree probably in order to build it up to where you want to get.
Yep, exactly.
Well, so everybody can go and check out Pat and his group at the Jazz Showcase July 25th through the 28th. Of course, 8 p.m., 10 p.m. shows Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then on Sunday, there's a special 4 p.m., as Joe Siegel always says, the Save the Children matinee, 12 and under get in free. And this is going to be a killer group, man. Joe Locke on vibes, Paul Bolenbeck on guitar, and Byron Landon on drums, and, of course, Pat Bianchi on organ. Pat, thanks so much for jumping on, man. I really appreciate it. We're going to push this thing out, tell everybody about it. We've got to get everybody out to the showcase this coming, in 2 weeks now from when we're recording. It's July 28th to the 25th to the 28th. But I'm going to make sure I stop by and say hi in person. But I really appreciate you jumping on.
Yeah, man, thank you, Mike, so much for taking the time to do this. It's great to get to talk to you today.
Oh, definitely. And, of course, they can get the new recording at patbianchi.com, and we'll link all that stuff up below, called In the Moment. And you can hear everything live and in person at the showcase. So, Pat, thanks again. And everyone listening on the podcast, I appreciate it. Of course, you can get you can get more interviews of the Chicago Jazz audio experience on all of the great podcast networks. And, of course, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we're always up there. And there's lots of different interviews on ChicagoJazz.com and Chicago Jazz Magazine. Until next time, we appreciate you listening.